Welcome to another episode of COVID Chronicles, a podcast by, for, and about people affiliated with Portland Mennonite Church in Portland, Oregon. I'm your host, Gloria Nussbaum, and my guest is Lisa Hughes. Welcome, Lisa. It's wonderful to have you with me.
Hi, Gloria. Good to be here.
As we do, we start at the beginning, and I do know just a little bit about you, and I'm pretty sure you are not a native Oregonian. So where did you take your first breath?
I was born and raised in Kansas City, Missouri. Midwest born and raised, and came out here to Oregon in 1997.
How many siblings do you have, and where do you fit in the family?
My sisters would say, isn't it obvious? I am the oldest of three girls. And yeah, my parents were both born and raised in Kansas City. And when I got out of college, I thought I would stay there the rest of my life as well. But that did not end up being the case.
So what is the span between you and your sisters year-wise?
We're about 2 years apart. 2 years in age because of birthday cutoffs for grades in school. We're 2, 2, and 3, but yeah, 2 years apart in age.
We are getting into the holiday season. And so going back to your childhood, can you tell me maybe how you celebrated Thanksgiving and or Christmas when you were growing up? What were some special things that were happening for you?
Well, we did the traditional things. We had big dinners. Up until I was probably 10 or 12, we used to always have them at our home. And then at some point, my aunt started doing Thanksgiving, and my mom would do Christmas and Easter. I was raised Catholic, so on Christmas, we would go to midnight mass. Thanksgiving, we lived near the Country Club Plaza in Kansas City, which is this large outdoor shopping center that has a big Christmas lighting event every Thanksgiving. So we lived about 5 to 7 blocks away from there, but people would come from all over, and like people would be parking at our house and walking down there for that event. So that was always a big thing. We'd gather, we'd have a meal, and then we'd walk down there usually to see the lights turn on. And my dad would complain about all the traffic and the people parking in front of our house and all that. But we had good regular, you know, Thanksgiving meal, Christmas meal, midnight mass.
Did you have some extended family that lived nearby?
So, come from a pretty small family. Each of my parents had one sibling. They each had a brother. Yeah. So, I just had two cousins on my dad's side, and they did live in town. So, they were part of our Thanksgiving holiday celebrations. And then my mom's brother and his family lived over on the East Coast in Virginia. So we did not see them much at all, like weddings. And my mom's sister-in-law's parents were in town. So when they would come in town to visit them, we would see them a little bit. But yeah, they weren't a huge part of our growing up. Just my two cousins, Eric and Brian, were in Kansas City. So yeah.
So it sounds like there were some boys in your life. Did you ever wish that you had a brother, or did these cousins help to fulfill that for you?
So I will back up just a little bit. When you talk about extended family, my dad had several cousins, and like there was one on a farm in Nebraska and one on a farm, Paola, Kansas, and Avoca, Nebraska. And we would go to big gatherings out to the farm, and that was exciting to us. I do remember, you're triggering some memories here. I do remember some Christmas holidays going down to Paola, and all the cousins from up in Nebraska would come, and you'd see these family members that you hadn't seen all year, and the kids, like the second cousins, we'd all kind of pretend like we were shy with each other, and the parents would say, go play, go play. And by the end of the day, you couldn't separate us, and we'd cry, but it would take us a couple hours to kind of break down that barrier of, I haven't seen you in a year. But hay rides and, oh gosh, yeah, you bring back some memories now. I love that. That stopped probably when I was like a teenager. Those gatherings kind of stopped when we weren't so easy to corral and drag all together. But big memories of huge tables and kids in the living room at card tables and adults at these big tables. So, yeah, those were, I remember some Christmas events for that. But most of my childhood, I would say from 10 or 12 up, it was just smaller gatherings in Kansas City. So.
And did your nuclear family ever do any vacations or travel or things like that as you were growing up?
My mom was big on that. She was rather poor growing up and did not get to go on very many vacations. She has memories of like one or two trips, and they were so important to her. So she made a very big point of doing vacations with us and really pushed my dad. He was concerned about finances and stuff. So a few times we would go down to the Ozarks and get little cabins and do pools and stuff. And then I remember a few big trips. We did some ski trips with another couple families. We'd pile like 12 kids and six adults into a motorhome and drive out to Colorado. And our moms would like freeze meals beforehand, and they'd get us all dressed up in the morning to go out on the ski slopes, and they basically turn us loose, different world. And then we'd meet up for lunch and stuff. I remember a big trip we did out to the East Coast to see, you know, the historical sites. This other family that were kind of like cousins to us, they weren't really cousins, but their mom and my dad had grown up together. One year, they would dress all of us kids alike so that when we were running around the big cities, we wouldn't get lost. And we were from Kansas City, and one of the years Kansas City was playing the Yankees, they decided to dress us all up in Kansas City Royals t-shirts. And so their whole theory was, if we lose one of you, at least when the police say, "What are you wearing?" we can point it and know what exactly what you look like. Then we did another trip down to Texas to do kind of historical sites down there. And I remember that trip. We did a lot of KOA campgrounds, things. Tents. Parents would usually stay in the motorhomes, and we were out in tents. And so, yeah, some very good memories of trips when we were little. And I do have to thank my mom for that. We did some canoe trips, but she's the one who really pushed for that. And I'm sure we did a lot of complaining and this and that, but there are really some good memories now that we have. So, yeah.
You mentioned that you were raised Catholic. I'm assuming that both of your parents maybe raised Catholic as well?
Yes. And I'm not a, what do they call that, recovering Catholic at all. I'm post-Vatican II. I went to Catholic education from third grade on. I don't recall any person in my life, parent, teacher, priest, or nun, saying anything negative about another religion. I went to youth group sometimes with my neighbor up the street who was Methodist. My mom worked at a Jewish hospital, and so we would visit with some of their Jewish staff. We had classes in school that would teach us about different religions. I remember a sixth grade field trip to the local synagogue, and, you know, the rabbi was always, we would say, "During your mass," and the rabbi would say, "During our service," and we'd say, "During your mass," and he'd say, "During our service." I remember him correcting us on that several times. It was kind of, people were different religions, just like they went to different schools or they lived in different neighborhoods. But that being said, most of the families that we hung out with, besides our, you know, our neighbors weren't, but, you know, my parents, we hung out with a lot of friends that they'd grown up with. And so, yeah. Very, very Catholic circles.
And we'll get to how you became a Mennonite in just a bit. But moving ahead, did you graduate from a Catholic school?
Yes. From third grade on, I went to Catholic school. So I went to a visitation grade school in Kansas City. And then, although my first 3 years were in public school, and I have very fond memories of that. And it was rather actually kind of traumatic changing to Catholic grade schools. Yeah, not some nice kids in that school, I will say. But then I went to a Catholic high school called St. Teresa's Academy, very similar to St. Mary's Academy here in town. And then I went to Creighton University, which is a Jesuit school in Omaha, Nebraska.
And how did you decide where you were going to college? How did you make that decision? Was it yours, your parents? Talk about that.
I'm just laughing because my sister says I stole her university. So I wanted to go away from home. but I want it to be close enough that I could come home on the weekends. And so Omaha is, I think the sign says 179 miles from Kansas City. So it was about a 3-hour drive. So long weekends in particular and such, it was pretty easy to get rides home, but it was far enough away that I was away from home. And I wasn't quite sure what I wanted to do, but I knew I wanted to do something working with people. And my mom had been a nurse, and my grandmother, my dad's mom, had also been a nurse. And it had worked really well for my mom to be able to work when she needed it, but also stay home when she wanted to with us kids. So, yeah, so Creighton had a great nursing school program, and so I went up there. My sister, Laura, who's 2 years younger than me, says she had her eyes set on that, and she definitely did not want to go where I was going. And so that's why I was laughing when you asked that question, because she says I stole her university. My youngest sister did end up going up there also as well. So my middle sister went to St. Louis University in St. Louis. So.
And did you know sort of from day one, by the time you got to university, that nursing was what you were going to study? Or when did you actually kind of make that decision?
I tentatively went into it, but it's kind of a funny story. I remember growing up, I remember feeling like my parents were always telling me what I was supposed to do, and I was always usually very good at trying to do the right thing. But I was clueless as to what, I was not one of those kids that from day one knew what they wanted to do. And I remember going and asking my parents what I should study. And I felt like for the first time in my life, they were like, that's your decision. And I'm like, what? You've been telling me my whole life what to do, and now I have to decide this really big thing. So that's my memory of it. I would just like my jaw dropping and hitting the floor and saying, you have no opinion on what I'm going to study. And I had friends at school who were told what they had to study. I had friends that like had two choices. You're going to be a doctor, or you're going to be a lawyer. That's it. And one who was told she needed to be a dentist because her dad was a dentist. So at any rate, like I said, I kind of fell into the nursing because I knew it had worked out well for me. I knew I wanted to do something with people, not like business or something like that. And it had worked out well for my mom. I had liked the sciences in school. I loved chemistry. And so I just decided to go into freshman year is like pre-nursing. In sophomore year there is when we started clinicals and stuff. So I just decided to try it. And it ended up being a good fit. And yeah, I was very grateful. Now you can look back and say probably there was some bigger power going on in there. But at the time, it felt very random in a way.
So you went to 4 years of university and ended up with what degree?
Bachelor of Science in Nursing, a BSN.
Yeah. And you were an RN at that point as well?
After you take your exam, there's a big test called the NCLEX. You have to take the exam and pass that, and then you're licensed. Yep.
What came next? And again, how did you make that decision?
So it's funny. Sometimes people don't believe this when I tell them. But I got a job at Children's Mercy Hospital in Kansas City, and that just felt like a very big relief to me. And I was just like, okay, I've got my job. This is going to be my job for the rest of my life. I just need to get married, buy a house, and have kids. And I just felt like check, check, check. And the thought of course, I've had some different jobs, you know, growing up, but the thought of like going through that whole interview process and changing jobs was terrifying to me as a 20-something year old. I know. So I had that job for, let me think, maybe around 3 years. And then, very quick segue, I went on a 1-week sister parish trip to El Salvador, and that kind of changed the whole course of my life. So I've had multiple jobs since then and lived in various countries since then. But at the time, yeah, I went into pediatrics. I was working on an adolescent unit. I thought I wanted to go into intensive care, but very quickly decided I didn't want to do that. So had a good couple years those first years. Because that hospital was divided up by age groups, I worked in all different, you know, I had kids with cancer, I had kids with heart issues, kids with cystic fibrosis, kids with HIV, kids with sickle cell anemia, diabetes, orthopedic stuff, surgery. So it was kind of a, even though it was pediatrics, it was kind of a general med surg. There was a lot. We had psychiatry. So we did it all on that unit. So it was a good couple of years. I learned a lot. I mean, you know, some kids with chronic illnesses, kids that had grown up coming in and out of hospitals. Some of their closest friends were the staff at the hospital, would be in there for weeks and not have any visitors, you know, except their parents. So it was, yeah, it was an eye-opening world. Some fun memories of some of my favorite clients. And back then, we used to be able to take pictures of our clients and stuff. And so I have pictures, you know, with their parents' permission and everything. And actually, we were even allowed to meet up. There were a couple of my older clients that we were allowed that, you know, were actually older than they were. Well, 16 to 21, that we were actually able to, like, do events, things with outside of work back then. I know, I think back on this stuff and it's so crazy. But yeah, with their parents' knowledge, they just, a lot of them had such chronic illnesses, they didn't have a lot of friends and a lot of social life outside of the hospital.
About what years were those, just for some context?
That would have been, so I graduated from nursing school in 87, so like 87 to 90, yeah.
I'm really curious about this trip because obviously it changed, like you said, the trajectory of your life. How did you find out about it? This was your first time overseas for sure. Talk a bit about how that all came about and why it was so life-changing for you.
Yeah, so while I was away in college, the church that I was raised in is a very large parish, Visitation Parish, 1,500 families in Kansas City, Missouri. And they had formed a sister parish relationship with a church down in San Salvador during the Civil War down there. So I think it was through SHARE was the name of the organization that the relationship was through. And this was a parish in the middle of San Salvador. It was like people that had fled from the war zone and set up shanties on the side of hills around the edges of the city. And then those shanties eventually became cinder block, you know, as people got money to buy a few blocks at a time, the cardboard turned into concrete. And that community is, yeah, still there and now has paved roads winding around what used to be mud lanes. And so they formed a sister parish. And I remember vaguely when I was not, at that point in my life, was not very aware of, you know, U.S. foreign policy, anything like that. So I remember them putting up some plaque about a bishop that was killed down there when I was home on vacation one time, who was Oscar Romero, if you know who that is, who, if you're at all aware of Central America and stuff, he was the archbishop who was assassinated in 1980 in the beginning years of that Civil War. And so, yeah, when I came home from college, I had joined what's called the RCIA, which is a group when people are trying to come and join the church. You kind of walk alongside them, and it's a way to enrich and renew your own faith as you're also walking alongside folks coming. So I've been a member of that, and it's a very long story, too long for this, but eventually by word of mouth, like, trickled down, and they had a group going in February of 1990. They had this trip planned, but in November of 1989, there had been a big offensive of the war, and six Jesuit priests and their housekeeper and her daughter were killed at the Central American University. Actually, we just passed, it was November 16th, 1989. So, and that kind of brought light to the Civil War. It was kind of the beginning of, there was about one more year of war after that before peace accords were signed. So because that event had just happened in the middle of this, it was like this private university in the middle of the town, and the soldiers came in the middle of the night and killed them all. So they were having troubles recruiting people to go on this trip because of this, you know. And so I just happened to be somebody who had mentioned to somebody that someday I would like to go. I had done a service trip when I was at Creighton down to the Dominican Republic one summer, between my junior and senior year. And that had been a very memorable experience. And so I thought, oh, El Salvador, Dominican Republic. So they were desperate for people to go. And so they tapped me, and and it happened, you know, it was just God's hand at work. The time period that I needed to go, I worked 12-hour shifts as a nurse. And at the time period that it was, I happened to fall into a time when I had 6 days off in a row already. So I only had to ask for 1 or 2 days off. All the pieces just fell into place, except for the fact that, of course, my mother in particular did not want me to go. But I went down there with a dear, dear friend who was 85 years at the time, Margaret Giblin, grandmother of someone in my class, woman who said she began to live her life at 65 when her husband had died. I think they had a very rough marriage. She was 85 years old and got in the back of a pickup truck as we drove to the village. So that was a really intensive experience for me. There was still, we were taken to the parish. We were kept, you know, in a compound. You could still have fighting out around in the background. And it was just a really intense trip. The spirit was moving in me before I really knew what was going on. I drove the delegation leader nuts. I asked a zillion questions because I was really ignorant about the situation. But there were two people, the assistant leader, Eileen Rosinski, and a young woman my age who was volunteering at the parish, Erica Dalberdine. They both sensed, what I would say now is they sensed the spirit moving in me. I don't know what they sensed in me, but they kind of took me under their wing, you know, when I was just having these profound moments of what's going on and asking these deep questions. You know, they would sit with me and hear me, and Erica kind of would take me in when she was running into places to arrange situations. I actually only was given 5 days at the airport to stay in the country, and we needed to stay for 8 days, so I had to go to immigration and deal with the threatening immigration officers, you know, giving me a, why should we do this for you? It was just a very eye-opening experience. And I came back after that week and could think nothing else about going back, returning. And I made myself, give myself a month, because I was like, I'm a very head person, and this was all heart movement. And I was like, Lisa, you're being emotional. Wait a month. See what happens. And in that month, I was reading the writings of Oscar Romero. I returned to what I thought was a very simple apartment compared to where my friends were living. And I was just like, you know, one family could live in my bedroom, one family could live in my living room, one family could live in my garage. You know, it just shattered my world. And I knew nothing before that trip of, you know, that we were sending $1.5 million a day down to fund the war in that country. So, yeah, it shattered my world. And I was back. I was supposed to go back in October of that year. And then the placement that they had for me in the city fell apart. And they offered me something else. But in my young mind, I was just like, oh no, I thought I was doing what God wanted me to do, and now everything's fallen apart. Maybe God doesn't want me to do this. You know, just the emotional roller coaster. It was all coming together, and then it fell apart. And I'm like, what does this mean? And they're like, but we have this position out in the countryside, and blah, 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 blah. And eventually, I had to calm down from that, settle down, take that in. And I eventually did go back. So I was there for 2 years the first time. I had to fundraise for myself and plan on staying a year, stayed for two, came back to the U.S., had severe reverse culture shock. And when I returned for 3 more years, that was with NCC, because I had met, when I was down there the first time, I had met Susan Clausen, who was an NCC volunteer, and she was working in the same program I was working in. So when I went back, I actually went back and replaced the position she had left as she was leaving. So that begins my connection to the Mennonites.
That is the perfect segue. The next question was, how did you find the Mennonites?
Yeah,
you've just answered that. And we don't have very much time, so I'm going to just rush you way forward.
Okay.
You moved to Portland for some reason in what year?
I moved in 1997, returning from El Salvador, because my niece and nephew had been born while I was down there, and they were living here at that time. So I moved in with them and lived with them for 8 months, and then they all moved back to Kansas City and I stayed. So,
And somewhere in all of that, you found Portland Mennonite Church. Talk briefly about finding PMC.
So my sister and brother-in-law, when I moved with them, they lived at 37th and Clinton. And I knew there was a Mennonite church in town. I didn't know anyone but my family here. So people down in El Salvador had given me the names of Gwen and Les Gustus and Zook as people to look up at the Mennonite church, and just as to have another connection in town. And so the self-help craft store was on Hawthorne, walking distance from my sister's house. So I walked in there one day, and Sue Glick, who I had no idea who she was at the time, happened to be at the counter, and I said, could you tell me where the Mennonite church is? And so she told me and told me when the services were. And so I just showed up on a Sunday. I mean, I was looking for a Catholic church here in town to attend, but I just figured show up for service on a Sunday. And Esther McCoy was sitting down the aisle from me, and she was on the Welcome Nurture Committee. And halfway through the service, I get a little note inviting me to the Welcome Nurture thing. And it goes from there. Jim and Mary Wanger were at that very first Welcome Nurture luncheon. That was their first Sunday as well. And so anyway, the story just kind of goes from there. And yeah, so I was a newbie at PC for many years, and now within some of the circles that I walk at PC, I'm kind of the old one. So, yeah.
So is it safe to say that you stopped looking for a Catholic church soon after that?
I did. So I was living without a car, so that had part to do with it. And I think the Catholic parish I was most drawn to was St. Andrew's, which was all the way across town, and the bus system was not very reliable. And I just felt so pulled in and welcomed. I mean, I let everybody know I was Catholic from day one. And I mean, you know, having the MCC connection really, really helped a lot. That kind of was credentials. But yeah, I just felt more and more at peace. And every time I go home, my dad's like, are you Mennonite now? I'm like, I don't know, Dad. Like, God isn't asking me that question, and I'm not asking myself. So I've never actually officially become a member. I've thought about the membership class several times, but, you know, faithful attender for many years now. And I would say I do consider myself Mennonite now. I mean, it was over probably a period of, I don't know, 10 or 15 years. Most of that time when people had asked me, I'm like, I don't think it matters to God. So, and I remember Marie Newcomber, when she found out that I was from a Catholic background, she brought me some tracts and was trying to save me. And so I said, oh, Marie, I said, every morning I wake up in the morning, I say yes to Jesus. So, yeah, it's been a good journey. There have been some tough moments, but I will tell you, I don't come from a singing family, but I joined choir in high school and got very much into singing. And when I went to MCC orientation and people broke out in four-part a cappella harmony, I was just like, whoa. So I love the music for sure. And I love Mennonites, what I call respect for each individual as a person, seeing Christ in everyone. And in El Salvador, the way that MCC worked as an organization, like, we didn't have a car down there for years because most of the organizations we worked with didn't have a car. A lot of NGOs will have lots of cars and drive around. And when MCC and El Salvador got their first car, there was this huge discussion about doing it, pickup truck. And they made it so that our sister organizations could borrow that car as well and use that car as well. So that it wasn't, yeah, there was just, I really appreciated the consciousness and decision-making, the awareness of privilege, the solidarity piece of walking alongside others. So, yeah, I've appreciated that with NCC. It's a good introduction to the Mennonite Church.
Oh, Lisa, I feel like we had just barely scratched the surface, and I could talk to you for hours, but we have to stop at this point, at least for right now. So thank you so, so much for giving us this little glimpse into your life.
It's been great. Hopefully I haven't rambled on too much there. Hopefully we stayed a little constrained and in the margins. So good to talk to you.
Absolutely delighted. Thank you.
Thanks for doing this.
And thank you for joining us for this episode of COVID Chronicles. If something you heard raised questions or you discovered a connection, take the opportunity to reach out and continue the conversation. I'm your host, Gloria Nussbaum. Until next time, stay well and keep the faith.